Vermont is a heavily Democratic state, and even in a good Republican year, which I think 2022 is shaping up to be for Republicans nationwide, it's going to be very, very difficult to overcome Welch, especially since his Republican competitors are either unknown or unannounced.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we talk politics, Vermont, and Hungarian. Well, as he runs for the Senate seat opening up when Patrick Leahy retires after eight terms, Vermont Congressman Peter Welch is the clear leader in the race to replace his fellow Democrat. A new Green Mountain State poll from the University of New Hampshire Survey Center looks at that race and more. For analysis, I called up Dr. Andrew Smith, the center's director. He's spending the semester in Hungary. After we talk Vermont politics, we touch on the recent re-election of Viktor Orban and the crisis in Ukraine. So Peter Welch, who's been in Congress since being elected in 2006, as of today looks to be in good shape to go to the Senate, yes?
I think that Welch is in excellent shape to go to the Senate for a couple reasons. First off, he has statewide electoral experience, being elected every 2 years since 2006. And frankly, people are, fairly happy with the job that he's done. More importantly, or I guess most importantly, Vermont is a heavily Democratic state. And even in a good Republican year, which I think 2022 is shaping up to be for Republicans nationwide, it's going to be very, very difficult to overcome Welch, especially since his Republican competitors are either unknown or unannounced.
So the Republican in the race so far is the former U.S. Attorney Christina Nolan. How did she fare in the poll?
Well, she's certainly not doing as well. She only gets 27% in a head-to-head matchup with Welch. The bigger issue is that she's just really unknown to most people in the state. A U.S. attorney is somebody that obviously people in the legal profession would know, but 67% of Vermonters say they don't know anything about her, don't know enough about her to even say they have a favorable or an unfavorable opinion of her. So when two-thirds of the people don't know who you are and another 12% are just neutral about who you are, it puts you in a very difficult position, especially in a state like Vermont, which leans heavily Democratic. Republicans have a difficult time anyway. And then being essentially unknown and really underfunded, I think she's going to have an incredibly difficult time to make up ground against Welch.
And we're talking about, in this particular part of the poll, likely voters.
Yes, these are likely voters.
So let's talk about the race to replace Peter Welch, who appears to be on his way to the Senate. There are several candidates running for Congress. Vermont only has the one House seat. What did the poll find there?
Well, the poll found there that really that you've got one candidate that's fairly well known among the Democrats and no real Republican opposition, which, again, isn't surprising. So Molly Gray is the best known of all of the Democratic candidates who are running. She's across all Republicans and Democrat likely voters. She has 23% favorable opinion, 25% unfavorable. The next two candidates with some reasonable name recognition are Kesha Ram Hinsdale and Becca Ballant. But for them, even about 60% of voters don't know who they are. The Republican that's kind of announced, Marsha Horn, completely unknown, 87% of people, voters don't even know who she is. So in a matchup between the Democratic candidates, it's still way too early to say who's got the lead there, large part because the candidates are unknown. Currently, 31% of likely Democratic primary voters say they don't know who they're going to vote for or they're undecided. The other candidates, Becca Ballant is currently leading, Molly Gray second, and Kesha Ram Hinsdale are tied. But I would say all three of those are so close together that I wouldn't put too much stake in a poll that's conducted in April and predicting what's going to happen in this primary.
Becca Ballant is the Senate leader, the state Senate pro tem, Molly Gray, the lieutenant governor, and state senator Kesha Ram Hinsdale. Between now and when it's actually election day, you think between the three of them, it could still be anyone's race?
I think it could be. It's going to depend. Well, I would say that the two elected officials have the connections within the political party and more ability to raise money and organize. But I think that it's still an open race. I think that we're going to have to watch and see what the campaign does. A lot of times in general elections anymore, with as politically divided as the country is, the campaigns don't seem to make too much difference. But in primary elections with typically very low turnout, the ability of these candidates to build a campaign organization and do that grassroots campaigning, I think, is going to be critical to who wins the nomination.
Vermont has notably never sent a woman to Congress before. Does that factor into any of the results that you saw in this poll?
Not really. In fact, I think one of the things, particularly in Democratic states, one of the things that's very helpful is if you do run as a Democrat. Running as a Democrat is something that has been giving Democratic candidates across the country advantage over a male running as a Democrat. And in Vermont this year, I think that's something that could be very helpful. But since pretty much all of the candidates who so far are running are women, I think that's that puts them in a good position.
We know that fundraising is a big part of who wins elections, but how important is name recognition to winning a race like this?
Well, it does come down to name recognition, but you really have to identify who's going to show up. And that does take some research, it takes some time, and it takes a lot of knocking on doors. So I think that money is important, but it's not critical. A well-organized campaign is more critical, but obviously money helps you build that campaign.
Let's talk now about the race for governor. We are waiting to hear whether Vermont Governor Phil Scott, a Republican, will run for a fourth two-year term. What did respondents tell you about what they think?
Well, first of all, Scott's quite popular, and if he decides to run, he's in pretty good shape to win. Overall, 56% of likely voters say that he should run for re-election. And this is what's interesting about that is 57% of Democrats say he should run. Only 48% of Republicans say he should run. And Scott's a Republican, but he does better among Democrats than he does among Republicans. When asked whether or not he deserves re-election, overall, 50% of likely voters say he deserves re-election. Only 25% say he does not. And again, if you look at that among Republicans and Democrats, 49%, so half of Democrats say he deserves re-election. 46% of Republicans say he deserves re-election. That puts him in a pretty good position to be able to win this race.
How unusual are those numbers where Scott has more support from Democrats than Republicans currently? That's got to be something of a national anomaly.
I think that's not only a national anomaly, it's a kind of an anomaly that that throughout history is very unusual. So Scott has, I think, been Democrats' best friend often in Vermont politics because he's been able to stay above a little bit of that Democratic infighting as a Republican. And he's somebody that the Republicans have been kind of shooting at metaphorically, but have been taking issue with because of his stance on a number of issues. He is definitely out of step with the more Trumpian wing of the Republican Party.
Now, your poll also gauged voter sentiment about potential other candidates for governor. We should say not many have announced a run for governor yet because they're waiting to see what Governor Scott will do. Leading the pack with favorability was the Democratic Attorney General, T.J. Donovan. Does anything stand out to you from that batch of potential candidates?
Well, Donovan is certainly the best liked, actually. Attorney generals are actually in a good position to run because they generally are seen as somebody who's law and order based, kind of a traditional person. He's doing quite well. Jill Krolinski, she's Speaker of the House, but she is pretty unknown. 58% of likely voters don't really know who she is. And Lieutenant Governor Doug Racine is relatively unknown as well. So you've got a lot of candidates that are out there, but Donovan is certainly the best known of those candidates.
So if you were looking at these numbers today from Governor Scott's inner circle, do you think he looks in strong position to run for another term?
I think if Scott would run, he would have an excellent chance of winning winning another term. This is going to be a very good year for Republicans. It may be a replay of the 2010 election, where Republicans did extremely well across the country. If that's the case, Democrats are just less likely to come out to vote. And even though Scott is doing better among, slightly better among Democrats and Republicans, when it gets down to actually voting, most people vote for the R and or the D after people's names. And those Republicans who will turn out to vote are likely to vote for Scott.
Let me change gears now and talk to you about another election, which just took place. Viktor Orban sweeping to victory in Hungary, where you are spending the semester. What are you doing there?
Well, I'm the faculty representative for the University of New Hampshire's Budapest program. We have 9 UNH students who are over here taking courses at Károly Gáspár University, which is our partner over here. UNH has had a program in Budapest for about 20 years. And I just happen to be the lucky person as a to get to come over here and teach students and also help supervise the program. But as a political scientist, it was a fascinating time to be here during a major election.
We've obviously heard, here in the States about the way the election may have been designed to favor the state, Viktor Orban, and his Fidesz party. Is that what you're seeing on the ground, too?
Yeah, today's party is quite popular here. And the biggest issue is they've been getting actually 40 to 45% of the vote in elections for the last several cycles. And I would say the kind of center-right parties have been getting between 55 and 60% of the vote ever since Hungary came out from underneath the Soviet era, starting with the 1990-92 elections. Hungary is largely a center-right party, and Fidesz has been in that area politically. But the biggest thing that Orban had going for him is that Hungary is a parliamentary system, and there are a number of other parties that range from far-right party Jobbik to former communists, on the far left. Well, they all have one thing in common, and that is that they don't like Orban.
Right.
And they ran as a coalition this time around, but unfortunately, the candidate they chose to represent them, who won the primary in this coalition, was a relatively unknown person. His name is Péter Márkizsoly, small town mayor, and he had no real partisan backing behind him. He had no party to support him. And I think that was a major concern for voters here, even in the coalition. When I spoke with a lot of coalition members, they were more concerned what would happen should Márkizsoly win, who actually would be running the show. Because, again, in a parliamentary system, it's the party and the seats that parties win that matters. So that, I think, was one of the problems. To your other point about the election being somewhat rigged, yes, the election favors the candidate who can win, the party who can win not only the most seats, but win by the largest margins. And the coalition support was largely in Budapest, and Budapest is about 20% of the population of the country, whereas Fidesz has done very well in the countryside, able to win very large margins in the countryside. And the way that kind of amplifies the margin that Fidesz has got. So Fidesz actually won 53% of the vote, but that gave them a veto-proof majority in the parliament. So they can basically do what they want parliamentary. One thing I should point out here is that the media is overwhelmingly stacked towards Orban and his party. There is not really no independent television to speak of, and it's difficult for it was very difficult for the coalition to get their voice out, and also it was very difficult because they weren't seen as speaking necessarily from one voice. Nobody really knew what the platform of the coalition was other than we don't like Viktor Orban.
Yes, I understand that the opposition got about 5 minutes on state TV to make its case during the entire run of the election. It also seems, from what I've read and heard, that the opposition, which was solely brought together by trying to oust Orban from power, made a lot of compromises to coalesce behind the one candidate. What happens to the opposition from here now that it has not succeeded?
Well, once they get the knives out of their backs from the other parties that ran in the coalition, they're going to have to regroup. And I think what you're going to see is probably some of these political parties, disparate parties, coalesce into actual unified parties rather than just a loose coalition of independent parties, all of whom really don't like each other that much. Not only do their platforms differ quite a bit ideologically, but the people who are in charge of these parties have old personal grievances against each other that go back decades. So I think there's an opportunity for some new candidate to rebuild the opposition to Orban and have it into a more unified party. You can think of something like Macron has done in France, where the old major parties have largely collapsed and you have a new party that was built behind Macron. I think it would take something like that in Hungary. But it's going to be difficult. Orban and Fidesz do control all the strings of government outside of maybe just the city of Budapest. And they do control media, and they have a lot more money than the other parties do. So it would be difficult. But that doesn't mean that this is an autocratic society here. It's actually quite free, other than if you're trying to get elected into the parliament. It's really quite open over here, and people are more than willing to talk about their opposition to Orban or their support for Orban. If you're talking to people on the streets or people in high positions or low positions within society here.
Well, just one more thing. Obviously, Orban has had a close alliance with Vladimir Putin. You're in Eastern Europe at a time of great upheaval there, given the war in Ukraine. How has it affected Hungary where you are?
Well, Hungary has seen pretty massive migration or a massive flow of refugees into the state. We've seen over 400,000, 500,000 refugees that have come from the Ukraine. There's a long history between Ukraine and Hungary, and it's not always been a good history because after World War I, a large Hungary lost two-thirds of its land and two-thirds of its population in the peace treaties after World War I, including quite a bit of Hungarians or ethnic Hungarians who live in what's now Ukraine. And they were not treated necessarily very well by the Ukrainian people or the government there. And those people, they're called Transcarpathian Magyars or Transcarpathian Hungarians, a lot of them have come over the border into Hungary, and Hungary has welcomed them. One of the things I think that is misunderstood is that Orban has had a relationship with Putin, and you could argue, and many people have argued, that he kind of learned from Putin and is copying some of the political tactics of Putin. But the one thing that came up is the deal that he made to get cheap Russian oil. You talk with people both on the right and the left, or pro-Orban and anti-Orban people here, they don't necessarily like it, but Hungary is really dependent on outside areas for its energy. It has little or no energy of its own. It has nuclear power plants, but those were actually funded originally by Russians. So I think what Orban has done is tried to steer a political path to keep himself elected and to protect Hungary and not put Hungary in the way of being attacked one way or the other. If you looked back through Hungarian history, there are many, many examples of the Russians coming in and taking over. They don't want to be in that position to antagonize Russia. And there's also been many, many examples of the West promising help for Hungary should it fight somebody else and not backing up those promises. So Hungary is very wary of getting involved in wars. It's a militarily weak country. And historically, I think they look back on the past and are quite cautious about antagonizing their neighbors and relying on friends who are a long way away and maybe not as interested in backing up Hungary as other people are interested in taking it over.
Well, Dr. Andy Smith is director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, and we've been speaking about politics both stateside and in Europe. Thank you for taking all the time, and just great to talk to you.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for talking to me.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.